Pick up the papers this morning for the fourth day. Commentary on the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott. Now the focus turning very much to his Chief of Staff, Peter Credlin, whether the Prime Minister should take Rupert Murdoch's advice and sack her. The rest of it looks at Tony Abbott's chances of staying in the top job till the next election. Reachtel poll on Channel 7 last night saying his prospects aren't great. 21% of voters approve of the job he's doing as Prime Minister, compared to 61% who disapprove. The ALP's primary vote above 40%, the coalition's falling to 39%, Labor leading 54-46. 71% disapproved of the decision to give Prince Philip a knighthood. The most damning part of the poll is the preferred leader question. Tony Abbott's the preferred Liberal leader for just 18% of voters, 30% for Julie Bishop, 44% for Malcolm Turnbull. That'll give coalition MPs food for thought before they return to power. There's a few things here. Rupert Murdoch very openly saying that Tony Abbott should get rid of his chief of staff, blaming his chief of staff, and saying that the blame should be put onto her by having her go.
That tried and trusted, proven form of management called man overboard. This is how CEOs do it all around the world. You've got to find someone to blame, a scapegoat, if you like. So let's throw the chief of staff overboard. I think Murdoch's got his countries mixed up a little bit. He's a US citizen now, and he doesn't quite understand the role of the chief of staff in the Australian political system as opposed to how it is parlayed in the White House, which is a very, very different sort of role.
Yep. The number of people who were saying this could be terminal for Tony Abbott, Andrew Bolt, has now been saying it the last 24 hours. You've got a number of other commentators saying that Tony Abbott may not survive as Liberal leader. So what is all this about in terms of his judgment in particular? Dr. John Hewson, of course, led the Liberal Party. He was Tony Abbott's former boss because Tony Abbott was working for John Hewson in the early 1990s and was his press secretary. He's joined us on the line now. John Hewson, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
John, thanks for joining us. Do you think Tony Abbott will make it to the next election as Liberal leader?
Look, I think the balance of probabilities are that he will, because the Liberal Party naturally doesn't change leaders easily in government. Secondly, I think a lot of people have been very influenced by what happened with the Labor Party under Rudd Gillard at the Autorite. So I think basically the pressure's on Tony now to perform. And, I just listened to your comment about Peter Credlin. I mean, there's been a long-term debate about Peter Credlin and whether she was, she was a great political warrior, as Tony said, in opposition, but whether she's really got the skill set to be a chief of staff is a different question. I've been a chief of staff for John Howard back in the 70s, for example, and my strategy was always, all the good decisions, all the successful ones are definitely his, and all the bad ones are definitely mine. And, I'll take responsibility for that. And there's a bit of that. But I think Tony did the right thing yesterday by saying, look, OK, you don't like the decision. And I personally don't like the decision either about the knighthood. But, he made it. He's got to live with the consequences of it. That's what he's doing. But people are looking for him now to reposition himself. I mean, deal with the problem with his office, which has been a problem for the whole time he's been Prime Minister, not just come to a head in recent days, but it's been there the whole time.
And can we just identify what is the problem there, John? What is the problem with his office?
A lot of people are critical of the control freak performance of Peter Griddle. I mean, she is seen to, set the rules and call the shots in terms of other staff appointments, in terms of when ministers can speak or not speak, or do media or not do media, or whatever. Overarching control of just about everything, which, offends a lot of people, particularly some of the experienced ministers in the team, apart from all the others. And that criticism has been growing for a long time. And so it's a problem that Tony's known he's got to deal with one way or another. It's come to a head on a number of occasions in the past. And he's defended it by saying, look, she was a terrific political warrior, the best you'd ever seen in opposition. That's true. But opposition can be more about politics. I mean, when you get into government, it's about policy. It's about governing. It's a different skill set. It's a different team of people to actually make that transition. And one of the things that personally surprised me is how unprepared they were for the transition to government in that respect.
How does he get rid of Peter Credlin, though, once Rupert Murdoch has called for him to sack her? Because it looks like he's kowtowing to a media mogul.
Yeah, well, that's an unfortunate dimension of what's happened. I mean, as I say, the issue was there anyway. I mean, when you get Andrew Bolt and others coming out saying, look, his friends are now criticising him, I mean, maybe his friends are trying to do him a favour, say, look, you know, cut the knot there and move on. Maybe that they'll come back on side for a while. I don't know what that game that is being played is all about, but I don't think the Murdoch comments have at all helped the situation. But Tony's not going to jump to the tune of a Murdoch or any other individual. He's going to make that decision himself. And look, he's got to have more confidence in his own ability. And the guy was a Rhodes Scholar. He's very intelligent. He's had a lot of experience in opposition as a senior minister, as a junior minister. Duck corner shots yourself, Tony. So make the decisions. I hear you made one bad decision with a knighthood, but, you know, you've got to reposition yourself, and he's capable of doing that. Stand up and do it.
But how does he do that? What does he reposition himself on? You can't go and make a big speech on industrial relations right now, because it's going to anger even more of the community, isn't it?
No, it's true. I mean, he's burnt an enormous amount of political capital over the budget and the difficulties of getting anything through the Senate. And, of course, they're all doing to him, but that is the Labor Party, the Greens, the Senate minority parties are doing to him what he did to the previous government. I mean, be negative and oppose everything. They're making his life particularly difficult. But he's got to rise above that. He's got to show some leadership. And one of the problems is that, you know, they make decisions without any explanation as to why or any strategy around them. I mean, you have a co-payment decision in health without a health policy. You have a university fees decision without a higher education policy. You've got to get out there and explain, convince people first as to the problem, what needs to be done, and then paint some of the options that are available to do it, pick one, and then be prepared to fight for it. And that sort of strategy, in the context, I think, of an overarching narrative, as you say, an explanation as to what you're on about across the board, how these bits and pieces fit together. And you're not going to do that with one speech. You're not going to do that with one occasion. You're going to have to build that credibility over time. And it's going to call for him to make some leadership calls about, okay, you may not like these decisions, but this is what we've got to do and why we're doing it. People didn't understand the co-payment. They thought it was to help the health system, yet the money's going to research funds. You know, like, it's not a big... It's a big ask to get people to accept that sort of decision when it's made in isolation. And so I think he can reset it over time, but he's going to have to work long and hard now to do that. And he's in a difficult period coming out of this, yep, this period about the knighthood, going into a budget in May. Hasn't got a lot of time. But I don't think, look, I think the bottom line for me is the Liberal Party basically and National Party really want Tony to succeed, and they'll back him in and out to do that, but he's going to have to show the lead now.
Does he have leadership in his DNA? We know he has opposition in his DNA, but is he a true born leader?
Well, that's the decision that, you know, that's the question that's been asked ever since that election campaign as to whether he can be a leader. Look, he was my press sec for 3 years. I probably saw the best and worst of him. He's a complex character. You know, he's got some very strong religious beliefs. He's got some very strong ideological beliefs. He's a bit of a mixture of these sorts of things. So there's an unpredictable element to it. But I think he has the capacity to stand up and lead. He's got the self-confidence to do it if he wants to. And I don't think we should appear shaken by all. He should just get on and do it. And fight for what he wants to do. And, you know, what's he want his 3 years in government to look like at the end? What did he want to achieve? Not all the promises that were made all across the board. Just pick two or three things that really matter and get on and do them. And, you know, take the people with you.
Dr. John Hewson, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much, Paul.
John Hewson, former Liberal leader. You know, underneath all of that, kept thinking to myself, you solve all the problems, you get yourself on the front foot, you come up with a detailed strategy, you get to take the people with you, and you still can't get it through the Senate, can you? Yeah, if you haven't got the Senate, you can't get anything done, can you?
No, you don't, but let's at least tell the people what you really want to do and what you want to achieve.